Hey everybody, welcome to another exciting chapter. Chapter? Do we call it chapter?
Installment? Sure.
Episode?
Why not?
What do we call it, Bill?
Desperately attentive to ratings attempt. How about
welcome
that?
To Sitting Around Talking Movies. I'm joined, as always, by Bill McCuddy.
Hi, that's me.
And Bill Bregoli.
That's me.
And we're talking today about a new film called Spotlight. We're talking about the new James Bond film, 007, called Spectre. We're going to talk about The Walking Dead. Is Glenn alive? We're going to just try to figure that out. And we're going to talk about what happened at the box office last weekend. That Sandra Bullock movie tanked, as well as a whole bunch of other stuff. But let's start out talking about this movie, Spotlight, which is a very important film. And I'll tell you what it's about. Before I do, I'm going to sort of whet your appetites by saying that I'm pretty good at handicapping Oscars. I would guarantee you that this movie gets nominated for Best Picture. I would take any bet on that.
Well, they nominate 10. I've pointed this out before, so it won't
but I think it's
10.
The odds on favorite to win.
No, I would agree with that.
And here's what it's about. Back in 2001, the newspaper, the Boston Globe, exposed the 100 pedophile priests in the Boston area, and as well as the massive cover-up that the Catholic Church did to hide that fact. And Rachel McAdams is in it, and Liev Schreiber is in it, and Michael Keaton is in it, and Stanley Tucci is in it.
Mark Ruffalo.
And Mark Ruffalo is in it. And that's just a few of the people that are in it, and they are, you know, working on the paper.
John Slattery's in it. He's great.
Yeah.
You know, people who say, oh, these TV guys can't make the jump, John Slattery's doing great.
Yeah, and the story won the Pulitzer Prize for this investigative team that called themselves Spotlight.
That's Spotlight Team.
The Spotlight Team. And it won the Pulitzer, and it shows, I think it's a great look at how investigative journalism works. I mean, you know, not only were they up against obstacles from both the local Catholic archdiocese, but also the local victims who were very reluctant. You know, it's a very closed community up there, and the shame of
the town. I mean, as somebody points out to one of the characters, I think it's Liev Schreiber, he said, you know, 51% of the people who read the paper are Catholic, so you're about to piss off our readership, and we may lose a lot of money based on doing this story. We should also point out, too, that Spotlight is a division that was given the luxury of time. In other words, they could take a week, a month, or a year to do a story.
Yeah, I
which
love
was
that.
Really unusual.
At the beginning, I said, yeah, what do you, when Liev Schreiber comes in, and he was like working in some Miami paper, and he's
right.
The new managing editor, or
editor.
What's his?
Yeah, he had come in when the New York Times bought the Boston Globe. They've since sold them, but when they bought them, they brought in this new editor.
Right, and he's like, well, what do you guys do? He goes, well, we work on a story. We take like about a year until right now, what are you working on? Well, we're looking around for something.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's not like we got to churn out a story tomorrow. It's like, not like 60 minutes. We're like, you know, although those guys do have time, but it's like, we need four stories every week,
right.
You know, and
they're under the gun then, Spotlight, because Liev Schreiber has ostensibly been brought in to make some cuts, and they've got to be the first thinking they're going to go. And if there's a failing to the film, it's that it doesn't really deal with some of the pressures that they're up against internally. They're just chasing this story. And it does that really, really well, I have to say.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I don't think there's any downside to the film at all. I mean, I really like the fact that, you know, if you think about it, this now when you talk about, you know, this scandal in the Catholic Church and these, you know, pedophile priests, it's pretty well known. But prior to this story, which was only 14 years ago, this was, I mean, they broke this story. This was a thing that was going on for a long, long, long time.
And they didn't know how big it was. That's what's cool about the movie. You know, in the beginning, they say, oh, it's maybe one or two guys, maybe it's four, then it's eight, and then somebody gets on the phone who's been through this program, this rehab program, and says to them, you know what? I think it's more like 90. And they're like, 90? And it's pretty cool.
But what's interesting, and this is not a spoiler because we all know what happened, but they show you at the end all the places around the world.
Yeah, somebody said if the end credits of a movie could get an Oscar, I think Amy Schumer said this actually, if the end credits of a movie could get an Oscar, this movie would get an Oscar just for the end credits.
Yeah, I mean, it just shows
you
all
the description of what happened.
Cities around the world where these, you know, priests that you know were moved around and you know, and it's just, but the acting is extraordinary, and the story by Tom, you know, it was written, the screenplay and written directed by Tom McCarthy, who you know, it's really interesting that this guy did this movie. I mean, if you look at this guy's other movies, I mean, the guy was a co-writer on Up, the Pixar movie, yeah. You know? I mean, talk about a 180 in terms of what you're working on, you know? And he did The Cobbler with Adam Sandler.
Adam Sandler, which was a real stinker.
I have one minor bone to pick with the film, and it's only because I grew up in Boston, and one of the figures in the movie is Colonel Bernard Law, and I was a practicing Catholic in Boston when he became cardinal.
Did he ever hit on you?
He didn't, but okay. Priest did do something. One of my friends who committed suicide.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But I'm not bringing this down. But that's how real this thing is. And Bernard Law is actually, they could have been tougher on him in the film. He was a bit of a jerk. Even very nice Catholics like my dad were like,
this was the guy that called in Liev Schreiber. And they had the, I want to have a private meeting with
him. Right,
gave him
a gift.
Gave him
the copy of the Catholicism. Catholicism.
Right, that's that guy.
Yeah, that's that guy. He was actually
Here's your guide to Boston, son. Here's how you get along.
And he was actually a nastier guy. I just got a bad vibe from the guy.
But maybe he was just nice to Liev Schreiber because he knew that Liev Schreiber, he wanted Liev Schreiber on his side. You know, the guy was like the press. So maybe he wasn't that nice of a guy, but to the guy who's the new managing editor of the paper, you know, he's putting on a dog and pony show.
Yeah, it makes a better movie, too, if he comes off as a nice guy, because all of a sudden he's been covering all this up.
Yeah.
I mean,
he was a lot more arrogant in real life, that's all.
It's being compared a lot to All the President's Men, and what I said on the show today was it's sort of the opposite in the sense that no one would talk to Woodward and Bernstein forever, except for Deep Throat. In this movie, what's fascinating is everybody is telling him this story, and more people keep coming forward, including an unbelievable Priest Rachel McAdams scene where he confesses, and their whole thing is, no, we got to get this substantiated. We got to get more corroboration, more. So that to me was the fascinating thing about the story. It's like they could have stopped this movie at any point, the way the Boston Herald could have stopped the story at any point and gone with what they had, almost from the beginning. Like a week into it, they've got this one guy who brings this giant box of evidence in says, this and this and this and this and this happened. And they could have done the story the next day, but they don't. They wait. Liev Schreiber, who, as you mentioned, comes up from Miami and is sort of chasing the story as a sensational piece to get some attention, says, no, it's bigger than this. Go bigger. Go larger. Go find out who's really in charge here and what it's from the top. So that's to the movie's credit and to the Boston Globe's
credit. I like
that
they gave Liev Schreiber a tan. I don't know if you noticed, his makeup is darker than yours.
Oh, yeah? In the movie. I felt that there could have been more of him, too, in the film. Yeah.
Well, what's interesting,
from his storyline.
I'm a big fan of Ray Donovan. And there's a whole subplot in Ray Donovan. It's not even a subplot. It's like a major plot point about the fact that Ray and his brother were molested by priests in Boston. So, you know, here he is playing, you know, Ray Donovan, he's this, you know, Irish guy and he grew up in Boston. Here he's a Jewish guy that comes up from Miami, but it's a similar themed thing, and I find that interesting. You mentioned Bill McCuddy, that we talked about this on the show. I should mention, as I do every week, that this is an after show, this is a podcast, to a television show that we do that's on Time Warner Cable nationally and on New York One in New York City called Talking Pictures on Demand, where we plow through the 300 movies that are on your cable box. Most people are only, you know, they recognize titles like Harry Potter and Twilight and Goldfinger, but, you know, there's all these movies with titles that you don't know, and we kind of tell you what's worth seeing and what's not, and as Bill McCuddy always says,
we watch the bad movies so you don't have
to. That's correct. So, anyway,
copyright.
So before we move off from Spotlight, Bill Bregoli, so do you think it's going to... Do you think it's the odds-on favorite to win the Academy Award this year?
It's my favorite film of the year.
It is my favorite film of the year,
so
too.
So far.
And
as I said on the show there, I haven't seen a Whiplash yet this year. I haven't seen Room. I haven't seen that odd, out-of-left-field film yet that's going to be
and it's so early to be talking about Academy Awards, but this is so... It has all the elements to win an Oscar for Best Picture.
Voters are going to love this.
Okay,
it's important.
It's an important film. It deals with something that... really brings to light something that should have been, you know, the paper won a Pulitzer for this.
Right.
The movie is done well. It's an all-star cast. I mean, it's it has all the elements
it
that
Oscar
voters...
It can only fail. Seriously. I mean, it can only... You know, we've had a weird couple of weeks here where big movies we thought were going to be big have stumbled and not made any dough. You mentioned the Sandra Bullock thing from last week. which is a smaller film, admittedly. But there have been a couple of other examples of things that we thought were going to be big movies that just haven't come through.
Yeah, a couple of reasons for last weekend. One is Halloween weekend is traditionally.
Right, well, let's just say that the Sandra Bullock movie, Our Brand is Crisis, made $3.7 million at the box office last weekend. That is ridiculous. I mean, that might sound, I mean,
World Series, any impact in that?
Yeah, that helps. That hurts.
Right, it was Halloween's World Series. I don't think the marathon, that would only be in New York, you know, but.
Also, people know that big movies like Spectre and Star Wars are right around the corner. So, like, why should I spend my money now? I want to have it on them. So
let's talk about Spectre.
Okay, let's talk about Spectre. Okay, so Bill McCuddy and I did not see the movie, but Bill Bregoli did. So, Bill, tell us your take on the new James Bond film.
2 hours and 20 minutes long. Not as
good
as Skyfall. It's a little long. It actually felt longish in this.
Ooh, not as good as Skyfall.
Not as good as Skyfall, but still pretty good. It takes place in several different cities. London.
Well, that's new.
Well, London, of course, but Rome. But last time they stuck mostly in London. This time they go to Rome, they go to Austria, they go to some Arab country.
They start in Mexico, right?
And they start in Mexico on the day of the
day. So Trump will hate it.
They dress thousands of extras for that scene. That was it.
They have an open tracking shot that's supposed to be like Touch of Evil, the famous...
Let me ask you this, Bill, since you saw it. I loved Casino Royale. And then the one, what was the next one?
Quantum of Solace.
I hated that. Yeah. I hated Quantum of Solace.
A lot of people don't like that.
It was indecipherable. I didn't know what was going on. I just hated that movie. Skyfall was good. Did you like Skyfall?
Yeah, I did. Although I've heard that Skyfall was okay. The fact that they, you know, Judi Dench and they go out to Skyfall and there's a house called that and blah, 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 blah. I thought that got a little long in the tooth. But other than that, you know, I have big expectations for Spectre.
So are there cool gadgets in this?
There's a very cool car. There's an Aston Martin DB10 that just made me go nuts. It was gorgeous. And
Bond girls? I mean, you've got the young woman from Bluest, the Warmest Color.
Yeah, Lea Seydoux. She's in it. She actually seems a little bit too young, as a friend of mine was saying.
I felt that, too, when I saw the...
She's a little too young. Monica Bellucci.
Monica Bellucci, I think, is one of the most beautiful women. The first age-appropriate Bond girl.
Who does the song?
Sam Smith,
and it's
totally unmemorable.
Totally unmemorable.
By the way, we're joined here by filmmaker, short film with a winner of several years in a row of Nate Brown. 48-hour film festival.
And Nate is also a sound technician here at New York One, and doesn't seem to know that he needs to talk into his microphone. Okay, there we go.
I figured I might be loud enough.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So what were you had the answer to?
Sam Smith. A weird song. Like the Skyfall song was just so big. And
that was Adele, the Skyfall song.
It was a big crescendo. And like this song doesn't seem to have...
No gold finger.
There's no hook to it.
He doesn't say Spectre in the song either, right? I don't think so. I think that's... fans have been like...
So is Daniel Craig going to continue? The first thing I heard was that he was like, no, I owe them one more. Then there comes this whole controversy where he said
I think he said one more after this.
Right, one more after this.
Contractually obligated.
And then he said something like he would rather, what did he say?
Tear his eyes out or something.
You're right. The
fingernails pulled off or something like that.
Then do another one of these things. So where does it stand now?
Don't know. Actually, he did press for the movie in London. I have a soundbite of him saying that Bond's in good shape and the franchise is in good shape.
He's in a really good place. I mean, I think the end of Skyfall, as sad as it was a new beginning. And, you know, having Rafe come on his M and sort of say, look, we've got a lot of work to do. It sort of felt like an opportunity to sort of look at it with fresh eyes.
See, since that happened a couple of months or a month ago, let's say, I think this whole story is like just to get press for the film.
Well, he's not going to get it. I mean, if he's contractually obligated to do another James Bond film, I mean, he's not going to not do the film.
Connery bitched and moaned about being James Bond almost from the second film on. You know, it's true. It pinched
me. Why did he walk away?
Pinched me into a corner, and he got old, and he got
no. But
you know,
then he came back with Never Say Never Again, which was not a Broccoli.
He also came back for Diamonds Are Forever. He went away, remember, and they got
George
Lazenby
for once. You can't use being too old as an excuse because. Roger Moore was...
Yeah, they brought Moore in late... Right. No, absolutely.
So was it his decision to walk away?
Yeah, I think he got tired of it, and he told them that.
But then he came back. It was a Warner Brothers film, and it was not a UA... Albert R. Cubby Broccoli
right.
Bond film called, Never Say Never
Which
Again.
Was basically a remake of Thunderball. That's right, Kevin McClory, I think is his name. He and Ian Fleming developed the first Thunderball, and the rights to that story reverted after, so it was a loophole that Barbara Broccoli and Cubby and all that drove them crazy.
So
but
why
he,
did,
got, the rever- he
so,
got the rights back to the story around Thunderball.
So why did he want to do it again? I mean, if he walked away because he had enough of it, what is it, like 10 years later, and it's like, I miss playing James Bond?
Well, I think
his
wife told him, I think they did throw a lot of cash at him. It wasn't a great film.
He was wearing that toupee.
Yeah, well, he's been wearing a toupee from everything after Dr. No. Did you know that?
No, I didn't
know.
Yeah,
from
that.
The second film on, he was, I'm wearing a rug in all of them.
So the wife made him do it?
Yeah, basically, that's the story. And supposedly, she came up with the title Never Say Never Again, which he thought was really clever because, you know, he was never going to do it again. So they remade Thunderball, basically, with, I think it was Klaus, no, Maria Brown, Maria Brando, what's that guy's name? The bad guy?
Klaus Maria Brando.
Yeah, right. And the Bond girl was... what's her name? Mrs.
What's
Alec
name?
Baldwin.
What's his name?
Mr.
Who is
Mrs.
that?
Alec Baldwin.
What was
well,
that?
That's
Mr.
Bruce.
Kim Basinger.
Kim Basinger, yeah.
You're the Bond expert.
I know, and that movie just so completely, it's almost like the original Casino Royale. It's so bad.
Right.
Bond freaks sort of try and forget that film.
Since Nate is sitting with us,
yeah.
I want to talk about, we're going to deviate from films for a minute, although I want to get back to some new films that are on demand. I want to talk about The Walking Dead.
Okay.
Nate and I talk about The Walking Dead a lot,
yeah.
before we take the TV show. So, last week, it was an entire 90-minute episode on Morgan.
Yep.
It was the Morgan backstory.
Do a little reboot for the rest of us who've never seen The Walking Dead.
Okay.
Let's just walk us through Dead or Alive and give us like a little background.
The world has ended. It's a zombie apocalypse. There's been, this is what, season 7 now?
Six,
right, and they just fight off zombies.
Is Ben Carson president?
There is no president.
There's no, nobody's in charge.
No, and it's a group.
It's small pockets of people kind of living their lives in the decay.
That much I think I did know. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, there was a character named Morgan who was in the very first episode of Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And then
is
he goes
he played
away.
By anyone we would know?
He's a British actor.
I
don't know. You're asking. Now I'm as bad as you with the Bond films. But anyway, last week's episode was Morgan's backstory, and it's kind of like a Karate Kid kung fu episode.
Yeah, they had done an episode with this character in the beginning. It was like the main protagonist, Rick, first met up with him when he was just figuring out what happened and woke up from a coma. That's the first episode. And then somewhere along the line, like season 3
he
or
runs
4,
into him again.
He ran into him.
Well, it's a small world.
In a city, but it was this
Seekers
kind of series highlight where it was this small.
Morgan was crazy.
He
when
was
ran.
Crazy.
Nothing.
It
Tumbleweed.
Was a small like a bottle episode sort of thing where they found him and just dealing with this guy and then left him behind again and now he's come back at the beginning of the season.
So this was his backstory, but I don't want to talk about the Morgan episode.
Okay.
Although, what I really want to talk about is there was an episode before this.
Mm-hmm.
There's very few original cast members left, to give you some backstory. There's only Rick,
mm-hmm.
who there's his son,
yep.
Carl,
yep.
And there is, I think Carol was in a
room. Glenn, Carol.
Right. Yep. So,
and these people are not dead. There's
well,
no doubt
that's
about it.
That's what we're going to talk
about. They're unexpectedly.
So at the end of the episode 2 weeks ago, Glenn...
Mm-hmm.
It looks like Glenn is dead.
He goes up. He goes out with a guy who has previously done him wrong and almost left him for dead.
Yes.
In the episode.
This guy Glenn almost died at the hands of this guy twice. He left him in a revolving door.
Says,
so Glenn's gonna get a little revenge now.
And the guy,
No.
The guy says, I'm gonna go do this thing. I'm gonna light this building on fire to drive the zombies away from where everybody else is. And Glenn says, you know what, I'm coming with you because basically I don't think he trusted that he would get it done. So Glenn goes out.
A broment. They bond on this. They go out to do this together.
Here's the thing. To make a long story short,
is that possible?
This guy
at this
blows
point?
His brains out.
Yeah.
Glenn is standing next to
him. They're on top of a dumpster.
Right.
There is a zombie horde on all sides of them.
They fall down after the guy, but Glenn falls down first,
mm-hmm.
and this guy who blew his brains out, who is definitely dead because he blew his brains out, is on top of him. And then as the shot is that all these zombies all these, they're called walkers, are on top of them.
You see,
so the question becomes,
like,
right. So here's what I'm asking you.
And there's guts being ripped out.
So here's what I'm asking you. Do you think Glenn is alive or dead?
I think that from a an internal logic standpoint of the story, that it would be impossible for him to have gotten out of that situation.
Okay, so you'll be disappointed if he's not.
I'm not going to say that I'll be disappointed. It does set a weird precedent for the future that they can keep pulling these sort of rug out from underneath.
Here's a couple of things.
Nobody wants
I watched
that.
Talking Dead.
Yeah, me too.
Right, and the head of the show read a statement that going, we will see Glenn again, whether in flashbacks, whether in an altered form, which or means comes back
like
as a zombie,
or just a part of him, maybe.
Or
like
a part of him, or he's not dead, perhaps.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's that.
Yep.
And I say to my, I say that, excuse me, that why make that statement? Like, in other words, when everybody else died, when Beth died, mm-hmm. I'm going to name characters that you don't know. When all the other characters died,
I went to sleep 5 minutes ago.
They don't have a statement saying, is he really dead or not?
The reason for that is because those were very
clear-cut
very
deaths.
Clear-cut
well, this
deaths.
Seemed to be a pretty clear-cut death.
It did, but they shot it in a way that it doesn't have to be.
Well, now the actor who plays Glenn was not in the
credits. He was not in the credits.
Bill and I are going to go get coffee.
So,
it might be a throw-off, you know? It might be something to throw
Okay, so I think he's dead. I think he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
Not because he's not in the credits. I think that was a throw off.
Yeah.
But I think that, I mean, if you watch Talking Dead, they say that, the other guy who was definitely dead who blew his brains out is on top of them.
Right.
Glenn still had his gun. He could just start firing his way out.
We talk about, by the way, just to jump in here and find some kind of semblance for people who are listening. No, we talk about this idea of science fiction not being able to violate its own set of rules almost every week on Talking Pictures, depending on the science fiction movie. If you say you can time travel this way, you can't do it that way.
Right.
So what you're saying is, in an otherwise perfect show, all of a sudden, there's a question mark as to whether or not they're breaking their own rules.
Yes.
Is that fair enough?
That is correct.
And so that's why you want to know what's going to happen
because
to this guy and what way he's going to come
back.
He's
a very popular character.
He's a popular character, and this is a show that has done this before where they've killed off characters, and they've said anybody can die at any time. And for them to say, well, anybody can die any time.
Rick can't die.
Except...
Rick can't die. He's the star of the show. He can't die.
Could they change Darren's on you? Could they bring back another actor as your Gary guy?
At some point down the line, if they want to pass the torch off for it to be a Carl show, I've always thought that this could be, if it's going to go on for 20 years, you see the progression.
Kind of like this talk.
A kid growing up in the world and how this kid becomes a man in this world.
All right.
So answer one other thing about the big picture here. Are all the living people trying to gather together in one place, or does the show kind of go from town to town or pocket to pocket?
The group finds a place and they're like, oh, this could be home, and then they get there and they're like, oh, this is a perfect place for us to live in, and then something crazy happens and you realize this town isn't exactly what it seems
on
the outside.
So we're gambling, and I say to you at a casino, Glenn, dead or alive? What are you saying?
I'm going to say alive.
You're going to say alive?
I'm going to say alive.
Really?
Even though logic...
He's going out on a dead limb on this one.
A dead limb.
And I'm
going
to say dead. And one more thing on this is... I never watched Fear the Walking Dead.
No, I didn't either.
Okay, so that tears it.
I will tell you, if you want to have a really depressing double feature Sunday nights, Leftovers is where it's at right now.
Leftovers.
Oh, the
Leftovers
HBO show is back.
It's so good, and the story.
Really, because it started out bad.
The storytelling is so
tight.
What's
it about?
It's about
Justin Theroux's in there.
Yeah, Justin Theroux, Liv Tyler. I'm trying to think of some Christopher Eccleston.
It's another sci-fi movie.
Christopher Eccleston had a great episode this season. It's about imagine that something like 1.4 or 14 million people just vanished, and what the world would be like after that.
Where, like, you wake up and you go, where are they? And the people who are left are called the leftovers.
Yeah,
and they have to figure it out. I know the story.
The first season is basically about people dealing with, you know, the loss.
The shock and loss.
Leftovers.
So, but the second, this second season...
On HBO.
It's run by Carlton Cuse, who used to run not Carlton Hughes, Damon Lindelof, who used to run Lost.
Oh, Lost.
And Petrada is the guy who wrote the novel.
Oh, so if it's David Lindelof, that means that there will be no answers coming
But they're actually coming outright and saying that they will never give you an answer as to why.
Oh, great.
Just tell me it's better than The Dome.
The Dome? Under The Dome? No, that's I watched one episode.
Hey, where can we see some of your work?
That's a good one. On YouTube, you could look up, let's see, I can't even remember the titles of my own movies. Frenemy Mine is the one that we did this past year on YouTube. There's also Platonic Parts is another one that we've done.
Great. So, and those are made in a short period of time and judged in the 2 days.
48 hours.
What do you shoot on?
We've shot on DSLRs and Canons.
And it's called the 48-hour
film project.
Right, and the one that I love was the one that you did.
It's the Platonic Parts, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's about a woman, she's a sex robot who becomes platonic friends with the person who bought her.
You had me at sex robot.
Yeah.
So that's, thank you, Nate.
Yes,
so
I
love Nate's stuff. They're short films, and they're very good.
Thank you very much.
They don't take a whole lot of time to watch.
And Nate makes us sound good every week.
That's right.
I try.
There are some new films on demand right now that you probably never heard of, and one is called Bleeding Heart, and it is with Jessica Biel, and it's what you call day and date. It's being released, I believe, in theaters simultaneously as it is on demand. And you know, in the old days when they would say straight to video, although on demand is changing, there is some really quality stuff that goes on demand, but this is not one of them. And she plays a yoga teacher who hires a private investigator. This is very early on in the movie. She thinks she has a biological sister. She was adopted. And she finds this biological sister, and it turns out that the biological sister is a prostitute.
A sex technician.
A sex worker. I prefer the term sex worker.
I think we all do.
And she's played by an actress, Zosia Mamet, who is the daughter of David Mamet, the writer, and Lindsay Krause, who was at one time his wife.
So there's talent in the family.
Yeah,
it's good. She's good.
But the movie is not good.
Can't recommend it. We can recommend the one that
Before we get to that, I want to just say that, you know, it's a formulaic, predictable B movie. And, you know, she goes from peaceful, zen, tranquil, zen teacher to Charles Bronson, death wish, gun-toting vigilante for a person that she knows about 5 minutes, who may or may not even be her biological sister.
As I said on the show, everybody in every scene makes the wrong decisions here or says does the wrong thing.
I can't buy it. And it was written and directed by this woman, Diane Bell. And the whole thing is, Jessica Biel is not that good. Maybe another actress could have brought a little more to the table, but it's not really her fault. The fault lies in the contrived script and the direction. Now, what's the
other? She never does yoga. The movie that I liked, it was called Bone Tomahawk. I'm not sure it's day and date, but it's not getting much of a theatrical release.
It's a big cast.
It's a big cast, but I don't know what the release schedule was in terms of what you mentioned. Day and date a moment ago means that they open the same day in the theater as on VOD. So I think I think this is doing the same thing, and it's got Kurt Russell in it, Matthew Fox, and it's basically a mashup.
Patrick Wilson.
They're all good in it, and it's just to give you 10 seconds about it. It's in the Old West. Kurt Russell, who we've seen as a sheriff before, leads a posse, and he's going out to a cave where the gang that's holed up. See what I did there? Mm. Are cannibals. So it's comedy, western, a horror mashup.
So kind of like Ravenous, a little bit?
A little bit like Ravenous, yeah. But actually, I think a little funnier in places. And I think it's 2 hours and 15 minutes, so it's a little long. Some people think it drags in the middle, but it's basically
Quentin
Tarantino. I said that I would understand why people thought it was dragging in the middle, but I like all of the campfire dialogue and all the stuff that goes on. So I recommend this film.
Well, I think it's a good setup, you know.
Tarantino meets John Ford.
You know, and I think the ending is good. I think it does drag a lot in the middle. I think he's trying to do Tarantino, and it is funny, but it's not anywhere near as funny as Tarantino. Some way it is the plot of The Searchers with John Ford, as you said. In some ways, it's also trying to be the violence of a Sam Peckinpah film, but without the finesse and artistry of that, you know? But I like the performances. I like Kurt Russell. And it's interesting. Kurt Russell plays this grisly Western sheriff guy, and he's going to play a similar character in the new Tarantino film called Hateful Eight, which I'm really looking forward to seeing.
I've read that script. It's it's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I loved
the big 70mm that he's doing.
Yeah, that's right. That's too. Tarantino's other thing. You know, he's got to shoot on film. He doesn't believe in video. And I think that's kind of cool, too.
Well, did you like Django, Bill Brigoli?
I was okay with it. After like 20 minutes, I got the idea and the premise. Mm-hmm. Said, okay,
I love Django. I love Django.
Yeah, really I do too. I like his whole storytelling, which doesn't happen in Hateful Eight as much, but mm-hmm. his whole episodic storytelling of here's this character and now here's their backstory and let's go. Yeah. He didn't kill Bill so well. He's done it, you know, he's done it basically in all of his films.
Look at Inglourious Bastards, which is, I mean, the movie opens, which is such a great movie. And the movie opens with... you know, this family hiding underneath floorboards somewhere in France.
So much tension.
I believe it's France.
Yeah,
you know,
and you just have the tension from this conversation.
Right.
And well, that's the thing. He overwrites everything, and normally that can be, or sometimes that can be annoying, but when it's in a tense situation where you know somebody's about to get killed, the more somebody talks, in this case, Christoph Waltz, who is the bad guy inspector, we should mention, and it looks a little over the top and cartoony to me. So.
Yeah, was he?
He's having a ball. You can tell he's having fun putting on his German accent really thick.
It's not too Dr. Evil and too cartoony.
There is a cat.
There's
a fluffy kitty at one point. You know, the
there's always lots of pushing.
Being tortured. It's awesome.
You know, what was the movie that he was in? It was directed by Tim Burton, and it was with Amy Adams.
Big Eyes.
Yes. And when I interviewed him for that, I said, you know, it's based on a real.
The big eyed lady.
The big eyed lady. And I said, and your character is real, but yet you have sort of an accent in this. And he was very turned off to that question. He was like, yes, I don't want to talk about that. So, you know, and so you
You
know,
found a nerve, Neil Rosen.
Yeah, so maybe
it's like Kevin Costner playing Robin Hood with an American accent.
Yeah. Well, I loved Inglourious Basterds, and Pulp Fiction would have to be on my top 10 list of greatest movies ever made. And if you talk about backstories, I mean, you know, the whole thing jumps around in time. It's great. And I'm really looking at it. And it's nice that Bill McCuddy has decided to read the paper.
No, I'm bringing up the next topic. It's from seven years ago. But I think we're going to do it as a tease. So go ahead and finish what you were saying.
Oh, okay. I'm just saying, like, all of a sudden we're sitting around here talking movies, and you got the paper open. And I'm like,
it's the yellow paper from 2008.
Yes,
yellow journalism is our specialty here. It's from 2008, and it's got a full-page ad in it. And I brought it because I found this while cleaning up the house. And I want to talk about this, but maybe we'll do it next week. We'll do it as a tease here. Here's a movie, Richard. I want to talk about the blurbs, how we've all been asked to give quotes for movies. And this is a movie called Knights of Rodanthe with Richard Gere and Diane Lane that I've totally forgotten about. But there it is. You won't want to miss Knights of Rodanthe, Bill Brigoli, Westwood One.
I was drunk when I said that.
We've all been in this place where a publicist corners us and said, and I don't know whether this is a good or bad movie, so I'm not trying to put you on the spot. Obviously, you liked it. But
did you like it? I saw this movie.
I think maybe next week we'll talk about our favorite blurb stories and how we've been cornered or corroded.
And I'll tell you my formula for getting quoted.
Good. We'll talk about that next week. That's great.
I told the filmmaker this morning, I was interviewing some people for this new movie, Trumbo. And I got to talk to Jay Roach, the filmmaker, and the publicist mentioned that she saw me quoted somewhere. And he said, how do you get quoted? And I gave him the formula.
Oh,
I'll
great.
Give it to everyone else.
All right.
Oh,
good.
That's
so we'll perfect. Talk about quotes next week. And we'll talk about a new movie called Brooklyn that stars Saoirse Ronan. And we'll also talk about... what else are we going to talk about?
Well, her portfolio of work, we're actually going to talk about the other films that she's done, some good, some bad.
Right, but we also have some other stuff to talk about, which is very interesting.
One of them is called Entertainment.
That's why I give him a lavalier.
Oh, yeah. I know. I'm surprised you're going to have to put
Neil
it on upside down.
As dives for his his bag, well, I'll tell you, one of them is called Entertainment. It's about an aging comedian.
One of them is called Heist with Robert De Niro.
Okay.
And
what's the third one, Bill?
I don't know. We'll tease. That's another great tease, Neil. And we'll talk about it next week on Sitting Around Talking Movies.
There you go. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. That's good.
Nate, thanks for dropping
Thank
by.
Thank you for having
thanks,
me.
Thanks, Nate Brown.